Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 17th, 2015. Well, it's springtime here in Massachusetts, and it's also springtime in the Arctic. That means time to go exploring for oil. This past week or so, the federal agency called the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management gave its final approval to Royal Dutch Shell to drag a drilling rig into a place way up north called the Chukchi Sea in order to explore for oil. This is a decision by the Obama administration that, in my mind, rivals the KXL decision. There's a lot going on around preventing it at the local level. There are people called kayaktivists who have taken their kayaks into Seattle Harbor, which is where this monstrous thing will set sail from, to try and prevent it from happening. And all that's good. And there's a lot of detail about what permits have to be, what final permits have to be obtained, right? It should be state and local kind of permits. But once the feds have approved it, it's much harder to stop at the local level. But the details are almost irrelevant compared to the question of whether or not the president has made a good decision here. Basically, by allowing this drilling to go forward, Shell will now go into a pristine and distant part of the world in search for oil that we don't need, putting the environment up there at risk, but basically setting a precedent for these mega projects to get fossil fuel out of the ground when we know it's impossible or incredibly unwise to actually use them in the long run. So the question is whether or not the president is hypocritical. If he's playing some sort of three-dimensional chess game that us mere mortals cannot understand, I doubt it. I think this is an easy way to keep the various constituencies he's worried about at peace, even though it is a terrible decision, a terrible precedent in the long run. Of course, our Bill McKibben, who everyone knows, lashed out at the president in an editorial in the New York Times, basically comparing this whole thing to saying, look, this is equivalent to having the tobacco industry sue to put cigarette machines in cancer wards. I mean, grotesque as that analogy is, I mean, essentially that's Shell has not learned its lesson, has not decided to de-emphasize the search for new fossil fuels, even though they know they can't be extracted. McKibben also makes the point, which I think is a good one, is that global warming cannot be addressed just from the demand side. That is to say, we can't just reduce the demand for fossil fuels and try and lower our emissions. We must also prevent the supply side, to reduce the supply of fossil fuels, because we know once they're out of the ground, they're going to get burned. Finally, McKibben says that President Obama has found his own version of denial, where he can give stirring speeches about the need to address climate change, but then essentially deny the meaning of the science, deny the import of the science by allowing something like this Arctic drilling to go forward. So, all in all, it's a bad decision, and in fact raises the further question of why the president has not stopped mining for coal and other fossil fuels on federal lands. I mean, he could do that with a stroke of a pen. And I see it as an issue that may be coming up more and more in the future. But But the president gets a black mark in my mind on this one. It's not good, and we can only send our best wishes to the people in Seattle who are in their kayaks trying to prevent this terrible thing from happening. A second thing that happened this past week, which is of interest, is has to do with this famous Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. If you're following the news at all, you will know that I think almost all Democrats in the Senate voted to deny the president what's called fast-track authority to negotiate the treaty. So, I mean, this is all very full of jargon, very confusing. The TPP is a trade tract, at least it's nominally called a trade treaty to try and set the rules for the next century to keep China at bay, etc., etc. And the president asked for the ability to negotiate in secret and present a final draft of the treaty for an up or down vote, which of course limits anyone else from getting putting in an amendment. A lot of debate on the media. To my mind, it's still framed improperly. What you hear about is jobs and nation states, and is it good for America? The whole jobs issue is one that's very confusing, because you know that even the proponents will say, oh yes, there'll be winners and losers. And so the losers will be blue-collar manufacturing people. The winners will be high-paid people on Wall Street, where there may be more jobs to do finance. It's just... Again, it seems like the whole issue is framed improperly. A simple question would be, why are there not environmental groups allowed to participate in the negotiations? Why aren't labor groups allowed to participate in these super secret negotiations if they're so important? Certainly ExxonMobil and various corporations around the world are right at the table making sure that their interests are well served, but the rest of us are outside and are supposed to believe that it's all going to be great and that our interests coincide with the corporation's interests. I disagree. And Naomi Klein's book, This Changes Everything, for example, pointed out that under these various trade rules, no country is responsible for the emissions that occur in transport. So the jets that fly back and forth to China and the ships that sail back and forth to China, the carbon dioxide emissions from those are not counted against anybody's total. And well, what's up with that? How come that's not involved or not decided? And I think that an honest discussion that included environmentalists, certainly from the United States and around the world, labor groups from around the world. I mean, who in the TPP negotiation is representing the children of Vietnam that are working for, you know, cents, few cents per hour? I think Elizabeth Warren said it right, that a rigged process will lead to a rigged result. So unless there are more voices at the table, the end result will not be good for everyone. I think we need trade rules for the future. Absolutely. I mean, we need to regularize this economy, but I think it cannot be done solely at the service of corporations and pretend that that is also in America's national interest. One other point to be made, and one that makes the TPP seem somehow surreal, is that we all know that while this TPP discussion of trade rules is going on, with much furious debate, we are preparing for the meeting of the parties in Paris, which is supposed to negotiate a global carbon, global approach to climate change. And it just seems as if this TPP debate is decoupled from the preparation for the Paris meetings, where on the other hand, trade and climate issues, the generation of greenhouse gases, is so intimately bound up with trade that the idea that somehow these two should go on separate tracks without any relationship to each other seems absurd. It's like the TPP people are on one planet and the IPCC people are on another planet. the TPP needs to take into account carbon regulation and how that will affect the economy of the next century. Again, it's one of the reasons that the TPP process, with its secret negotiations, is somehow a bad deal for the rest of us. So there you go. And then finally, there's another issue that is floating around that we ought to consider, and that's the one of immigration. Again, if you've been listening to the news, you'll know that the European Union is having a big internal debate about how to manage the, I'll say thousands, I don't know the exact number, but many, many people who are trying to cross over from North Africa into Europe. Similarly, in the, it's called the Andaman Sea, I think it's off Thailand, there are people stuck in boats, desperate for food and water, trying to get from, you know, one bad place to a better place. So why is this a climate issue? Well, it's, I think, in its own right, the immediate driver for most of the immigration is the search for a better life. I mean, things become intolerable where you are. You have to go someplace else, and you're ready to take big risks in order to get away from where you are. It's the second and third order question of what level climate has contributed already to the need for people to move. I mean, is it water scarcity? Is it desertification in Northern Africa? Is that what drives the obvious top-level conflicts? There's a case to be made that the whole Arab Spring is at some level a climate issue that has now spilled over into all these other immigration issues from Syria to the north of Africa. I read somewhere that, you know, just pointing out that when we lost the Malaysian Air flight over the South Pacific somewhere, we spent weeks and weeks and weeks searching for this plane. But we know that there are thousands of people desperately stranded floating around in the ocean, and we can't quite get our act together to deal with those people. The point being that as we go forward, as the climate, if we stay on the current path, continues to degenerate, shall we say, these sorts of climate-driven migration issues will become more and more important. And perhaps what we're seeing now is a foretaste of what we might see in the next 10, 20, 30 years as climate issues become more pressing. So those are three upbeat topics. I hope you're not too depressed after hearing them, but I think that they are serious things that we need to recognize and find a way to contend with. So we'll put up some of the links to what we've talked about here on the blog. It's a WordPress blog, massclimateaction.wordpress.com. You can leave a comment. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to the show there and share it with your friends. You can listen to the show directly on Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes, searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you all again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.